Hello, this is Richard Outram, and welcome to the Prepare for Growth podcast series, bite-sized wisdom for leadership and personal development. So thank you for taking time out to join me. I'm so grateful for this unique opportunity. Okay, and in this week's podcast, I'm excited to introduce Jeffrey Hazlett, chairman and founder of the C-Suite Network, host of C-Suite Radio and C-Suite TV. Hall of Fame speaker, Jeffrey is also author of four best-selling business books, The Hero Factor, Think Big, Act Bigger, The Rewards of Being Relentless, Running the Gauntlet, and The Mirror Test. Jeffrey is frequently cited in Forbes, Success, Mashable, Marketing Week, and Chief Executive. He shares his executive insight on TV networks such as Bloomberg, MSNBC, Fox Business, and C-Suite TV. He is a former Bloomberg contributing editor and primetime host and appeared as a guest judge on NBC's Celebrity Apprentice with Donald Trump for three seasons. Jeffrey is chairman of Tallgrass Public Relations. His prior roles include CMO of Eastman Kodak and was instrumental in the economic turnaround of this iconic firm. He is a board member for numerous companies and has bought and sold over 250 companies over his career. And Jeffrey's wisdom bite for this episode is why every company needs to act like a media company. Jeffrey, I am so thrilled. This is fantastic. What an illustrious career. I mean, this is fantastic. I'm out of breath already.
Well, it's not over yet. I still feel like, you know, even though I'm going to be 63 this year, you know, I don't even think of 63. I used to think of people who are 63 really old. Now that I'm 63, I think I'm just beginning. I'm just getting warmed up for stuff, you know, and really, truly, that's the way I feel. I mean, I've done a lot of things, bought and sold hundreds of companies, billions of dollars, but I'm still, you know, cleaning toilets as a startup, you know, so you do what you got to do and do it the way you got to do it. But I still feel like, holy crap, I still feel like I'm in my early 30s and still doing it like, you know, somebody asked me, when did you make your first million? I said, I made it by the fine time I was 26. And, you know, school hard knocks, you know, and the first thing I did was bought a Mercedes, which was just nuts. Because that Mercedes, every time I drove by the Mercedes dealers, wanted to go in for a checkup, you know. So anyway, that's back then when the Mercedes weren't as good as they were today. But anyway, and it was a used Mercedes, it was one of those big ones. But anyway, you know, I still feel like that same. I still feel the same. So thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. No, good for you, Jeff. This is and it's a new Ford, and I can tell by your energy and spirit that you're living the dream, and you're younger than your years, should I say. But
you know, every day I go to bed hoping I'll hurry up and sleep so I can get up the next day and get going. I mean that's the way I am. I will tell you, over the last couple of years, I haven't felt as much like that, but something just triggered. I don't know what it was. I'm just tired of everybody, you know, quite frankly, bitching and moaning about the economy or this or that, or because we got COVID or whatever. I'm tired of it. And like, you know, and I'm one of those people, I don't want to be a victim, and I don't want other people to be victims. So if I can go out and do it every day, then you could do it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, did I miss anything from your introduction, Jeff?
I don't think so. I don't know. I think that's pretty good. I mean, I'm sure this. I've done things like I started up a pheasant farm one time. I was trying to grow pheasants, tried to corner the market on pheasants till I realized that there wasn't one. You know, I serve on 14 corporate boards today. A number of them are public companies. Some of them I own, and then others that I just participate on. And I do a lot of consulting, a lot of that stuff. But who knows? Yeah, we'll figure it out.
That's awesome. So we're going to jump in three basic segments. What have you learned? All right. What would you change, and what are you grateful for? And then we're going to have a quick round. Okay.
Yeah, right. Sure.
So what have you learned? So as your wisdom bite, introducing this, why every company needs to act like a media company. Why is that? Why should every company act like a media company, Jeff?
Well, because the digital world's changed it. And I just got the phone with one of the most iconic people on TV. He had a show for 26 years, and, you know, stuff changed for him. And, you know, and I was partnering with some stuff. Stuff didn't work out. Things change. They change so fast that you have to learn. You know, it used to be that you could put a yellow page ad, and then most people listening on this show right now don't even know what the hell we're talking about. But you know, and by the way, the bigger the ad, the further you were up in the, you know, in the listing, right? And I can remember spending thousands of dollars a month for yellow page ads when I owned a printing business back in 1986, you know, and that was the thing to do, along with, mailing postcards and letters and things like that, direct mail, which, you know, they don't do as much today, even though it's still a very trusted medium. Mail's still an extremely trusted medium. You still can do really well with it. But nonetheless, things change. And then, you know, then let's look at Kodak. When I was at Kodak, I was spending $20 million a year, $20 million a year with Google to basically promote Kodak.com. Who doesn't know that? Or whatever your company is, a big iconic brand like that, you know, $187 billion company. And yet I was spending that kind of money just to push my own product. That's my own thing. That's our, you know, my stuff. Right. And that doesn't seem right. Well, now that's gone away for the most part. You know, it's all organic, right? So you can't necessarily do everything now. So what do you have to do? You have to become the expert. You have to become the thought leader. And in order to become the thought leader, you got to be a media company, which means sell the company, sell you. I learned that, you know, 15 years ago when I, you know, like Forbes was naming me the celebrity CMO. And then I was, you know, a judge on Celebrity Apprentice. I was on this, I was on all these shows because, you know, when I was of course, if you look at me, of course, this is on audio, but if you looked at me, you'd see, man, I get it. He's eye candy, right? You know, but, you know, if you're, here's what I say about the stuff that we're talking about today, Richard, if you're a dry cleaner in St. Louis, you can't rely on the things that got you where you were before because, you know, COVID changed a lot of this. Behaviors changed in terms of that. So days became weeks, weeks became months, months became years. I mean, digital changed everything. And so now you have to be known as a dry cleaner in St. Louis as the doctor of spots. You have to show people that you can get the blood out of this or the grass stains out of this, and you educate them and you build trust because content leads to a community of fans, right? Of people who like you, who believe in you, who drink the Kool-Aid about what you have to say, think, or do. And then that leads to, hello, commerce. Content leads to community, which leads to commerce. And that's what you have to do. So you have to become the expert of your, you know, the dominance of your domain, the leader of your category, the thought leader. And that's why content's an important part of it, because that's what people we're absorbing it. You know, I sit there for hours watching reels sometimes, you know, and just looking through things and content, and I'm just intrigued by it. I mean, you know, there's probably not a chiropractic, whatever one I haven't seen, or horseshoe trimming, hoof trimming I haven't seen, or cow trimming. Anyway, nonetheless, but my point is that's how you become the expert, is by creating great content.
Awesome. Awesome. And I think if I was to summarize what you're saying is cross platform content will replace single channel brands. What you were saying before about the old days of yellow pages, you know, content needs to reach fragmented audiences. You're 100%. It needs to be much broader.
Well, what works for you doesn't work for me. Meaning you're an Instagram guy. I'm a Facebook guy, or you're this or that. I like watching this. I'm on Paramount. You're on Hulu. I'm on this. You're on that. You have to go. Everybody says, well, I don't want to do all this. Well, then I guess you don't want to do all that business. You got to be where the people are. Right. You can't. It used to be you built it and hoped they would come. Well, all you get when they do that is a baseball field in the middle of Iowa that nobody ever goes to. Right. That's, you know, the field of dreams. It doesn't work that way. You've got to go where you are. I've got to go where you are. I've got to go the way you want it. And that's the price of doing business. That's table stakes today, man. That's table stakes.
And there was one thing you mentioned. I want to just poke a little bit more on this one. Content should spark authentic dialogue with audiences. I think that's a big, big shift. I mean, tell me more about that.
Well, I want to be, it's got to be real, right?
Yes.
I mean, look, today we see these thoughts, a lot of thought leaders. You see people say they're thought leaders. You can put up, anybody can put up a website and look like a $1 billion brand. Doesn't mean they're a $1 billion brand. Doesn't mean they're a real brand. A brand is nothing but a promise delivered. And I'm talking about a good brand, quality brand, brand. That brand's something that we used to hear in South Dakota. We always put on a cow and occasionally put on a horse, right? It's the identification of ownership on the side of a bovine. And then later became this thing we identified with a company and the brand. So to be a brand today, anybody can do it. You can make yourself look good. And today there's, like, if we get into thought leadership, today there's 18-year-old, 19-year-olds who are life coaches. Let me be clear. At 19, you're not a life coach. You're a team coach. Okay. So anybody can say anything and do anything, but it's the proof's in the pudding. And you can watch and see and learn and hear and feel and talk to others that know, is this person authentic? And we're going to sort this bullshit out pretty quick, right? And we're still going through that problem. You know, that's why, you know, we started the C-suite network, because we wanted to trust a community of C-suite executives, because anybody could go out and do this. And I learned the power of getting together with other C-suite executives of, you know, billion-dollar companies like CMOs. And we had similar problems. We had similar issues. We had things that we needed to talk about that, you know, when I'm spending $100 million on the Olympics, you know, not a lot of companies that do that. Okay. So, you know, for me to turn to somebody and say, hey, what do you think? Well, I'm going to get advice, not counsel. And I want counsel. I want counsel. I want people who have been there before, done that, right? And so it's important for us to understand that people are authentic, because then I can cut through the bullshit that's out there for each of us that we see all the time. And as I said, we're still going through it, because, you know, you get these influencers. There's an influencer out there I saw, what, this last year, she has 2 million followers on Instagram. 2 million followers. You think, oh, my God, she's got to be great. So a T-shirt company hired her. T-shirt company hired her to sell T-shirts. She sold two. Yeah, okay. She's got a lot of engagement. So, you know, so deep down, she's shallow, right? I mean, wrong kind of thing, wrong way to do it. And so, I'm working with a lot of companies right now on influencer programs. And, you know, I'm saying, hey, look, it ain't the big influencers, the micros. It's the people that really do the stuff. And let's go find the real people.
I want to go deeper on that one there. But I got to tell you, Jeff, the conversation has already just escalated in energy. I love it.
Cool. Well, cool, I guess that's because, see, I'm sponsored by Red Bull and they send me like 10 Red Bulls. No, I'm just joking. That's not true. I'm just having a good time. But look, I mean, why wouldn't you want to have a good time and do it right and, you know, have
Absolutely.
Some fun?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the data suggests that content marketing revenue totaled $63 billion. That was in 2022 and is projected to go up to $107 billion by 2026. Now, you made a statement. I've been following you for some time. Why do you say that content is king, activation is queen, and context is the kingdom?
Ooh, I love that quote. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, do I?
Well, because content's everything, right? But if you don't do anything with, you know, as I say, everybody, you know, that someone once said content's king. I don't even know who said it. Cash is king. I know who said that. Cash is king. We know that. But if, you know, but if content's king, but you got to do something with it. Okay. But just by doing something with it doesn't mean squat, unless it's in context for people to use the content in some valuable way. So you've got to be able to have good timing, good reach. It's just, you know, we give a good example. I know a lot of thought leaders out there writing books. All right. Or come up with a podcast and want to do a podcast, don't know what to say. Or, you know, or to name it, right? And so, you know, I watch people like books. I would name your book after something people search for. Yeah. You know, I'm working with a group where today, my own company, we're doing a group, we're doing this anthology where we're going to go out to a bunch of CEOs and ask them to write pieces of the chapter. And everybody's, my team's talking about this XYZ anthology. And I said, would you stop calling it an anthology? Who cares? This sounds like something we're going to put on a shelf and it gets dusted like every 10 years. I said, what problem is the book solving? What problem is the book solving? So that's in the context, right? So we're going to have great content, and we're going to go out and sell it. I know we can sell it. We'll sell it because we're great at selling. We're great at marketing. But what problem does it solve? And everybody went blank. I said, okay, guys, when you figure that out, and it was guys and gals, mostly women on the call with us because we were women on our team and men. And I said, when you tell me the answer to that, now we can start the project. Now we can start it. And that's what we have to do. You have to think about in what context. You know, I see authors come up with the names of their books, and they come up with these weird titles, or they come up with such generic ones. Like, you know, we have one podcaster who came to us early on. It's, you know, Jeff, I'm going to do this innovation podcast. I said, that's great. He said, yeah, what are you going to call it? Well, I'm thinking innovation. I said, don't you think there's one or two out there like that? And then, but we came up with another idea, gobsmacked. Those gobsmacked moments in your business. And now he's interviewing CEOs of companies where they had these huge breakthroughs in innovation. And gobsmacks, for those that don't know, it's I believe it's an Australian term, but you're British as well. So you guys might transfer it over. It might transfer, but gobsmacks, like you're sitting in the tree and something falls from the tree and hits you in the head. You've been gobsmacked, right? That's what it is. And so we have those innovation moments.
I love
so that. There you go.
I love that. I love that, Jeff. Now, beautifully said. Now you're touching on strategy. So what questions, and you touched on a couple just now, what questions must a company ask to build an owned content strategy? They're basic questions like you just mentioned. Simple stuff that people don't think about.
It's real simple. The first one's the purpose. So let's give, let me talk to you about podcasters. Like, so today we have in the C-Suite Network, we have 450. We'll be at 600 by the end of the year. 600 podcasters, each doing probably weekly shows. So 600 times 52, that's a lot of podcasts per year, right? And, you know, millions and millions, over 50 million downloads. But when I talked to most podcasters, I said, the first question is, do you want fame or do you want fortune? Because what's your model? Do you want to be famous or do you want to really make it drive the business of what you do? And since most podcasters on our network are, or what I call thought leaders, coaches, trainers, authors, speakers, or the heads of brands trying to promote their product service to raise the level of conversation of what they do and how they do it in a way that's unique to everybody else in the marketplace where there's millions of others out there trying to do it. Well, we want fame or fortune, because if you want fame, then you're going to do things a different way. If you want fortune, then you're going to do things a different way. I tend to lean towards fortune because if I do a good job with what I do, I'll make money at it. And if I make money at it, you know, I'll become the best at it as well. Then I get the fame for free. And if not, I can buy it if that's what I want, right? So that's that piece of it. The other thing is we work and counsel a lot of people who are doing podcasts. Again, think about the end in mind, right? That's what you want to think. What problem are you solving? What are you trying to do? And most people say, oh, start a podcast. Well, then it takes them about a year to figure out what they want to do with the podcast, right? You know, or I started a podcast and it was like this. And then a year later, it was totally different the way we started to structure it, right? And then you want to start to look at, okay, what's a business podcast? The average business podcast is 23 to 27 minutes. It does this, it does this, it does this. You know, there's certain pieces of it that you want to know versus a consumer podcast and so forth. But the other thing we do with a lot of the podcasters is we sit down with them, Richard, and say, sometimes interview the people you want to do business with, because you can use it as a way in which to get to those, you know, to customers, because this conversation that we would have is so intriguing about what you do, and you're interjecting by the way you ask the questions, or maybe even a thoughtful comment after your guest has said this, that they go, oh, that guy's smart. I think, man, he just referenced his book. He's got a book. Oh my gosh. Oh, yeah. He just said he was on stage. Oh, I can hire him for a speaker. You know, he just said he does boards. I have a board, you know, vacancy. Man, maybe I should be talking to this guy. So that's the way in which you do it. But if you start with the things of what is it, what problem, I always start. My son said this to me, and it's I think it's one of the most brilliant things I've ever heard somebody say. And I think I'm a pretty brilliant guy myself. Now, by the way, it's not hubris, Richard, when it's true. It's not bragging when it's true. That's what I say. So You got to walk with some swagger, brother. If you can't walk with swagger and have some fun, what's the use? What's the use, right? So, you know, and he once said, and you hear me say it all the time, what problem are we solving? You know, it's like I start every meeting with, what is our purpose of the meeting? What is it we want to get done here? How can I help you? Every call, when someone calls me, ask these key questions to drive the outcome of whatever that time period you're going to do, you know? Because if you don't, you're going to spend a lot of time, beating around the bush to get to where you want to go.
How about this additional question when we're trying to build a content strategy, Jeff? And it goes back to your point about authenticity. What is the organization's personality?
Oh, that's a big one. I think you get a sense of mind, right? So that's what you want to have, and you want it to come back. Good example of this. I was recently writing a series of. I was with a bunch of thought leaders. I lead this thing called the Thought Council, which is a group of thought leaders that get together on a regular basis, and we mastermind with each other. And it's just a wonderful group. And we've been together for years, and we add a few new members every year. And I brought in an AI expert because we were talking about ChatGPT, and I jumped in on it with some other people, and I was like looking at this thing, and I'm using it for code writing and building some brochures and some other things that this thing could do. And so I said, well, it could do these nurturing emails. So I asked it to do a series of 7 nurturing. I just picked 7 with a flashlight right out of my rear end. I mean, who knows? 7, 8, who pick out whatever you want. But I thought, well, do a series of 7. So it did them. And then I had this expert who was on with us and said, I mean, everybody's like, oh, you know, gobsmacked. Everybody's like in awe. Oh, my gosh, our mouths are open because we're watching on screen as it built these sequencing letters that would have taken us an entire day to write. Right. And it did it. And then he said, now put these letters in the voice of Jeffrey Haislett.
Right.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
It then took my books, my podcast, all the stuff that's out there on this way, and it put them and injected them into the letters to where, I mean, I was so excited because I could see the essence of who I was in the letters, the way I spoke, right? Yeah. The swagger of which I walk and talk and speak was in those letters. That changed the letters, right? So you want to have a personality, right? People identify with people. Now, am I right for everyone? Oh, I'm sure, unfortunately for you, there's been 3 or 4 people have already hung up on this podcast, listening on this podcast, because they just go, who the hell is this guy, right? But, you know, that's okay. Because, you know what? I don't mind that. To me, that's good. Why? Because I get to the people that really want to connect with that personality, right? It drives me to the top of the heat, not to the bottom. It drives me to the very top of the mountain and not to the bottom very quickly, because you get to see who wants to go along for the ride.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's what you want. That's what you want. So, you know, I'm not your cup of tea. I'm not the person you're going to invite over for dinner or whatever. Those you want to know what that is, because it just, you know, tell me, you know, how many times have you written letters or emails? And, I say a letter, nobody writes letters anymore, but you know, emails or text messages or outreach to people, and they ghost you. They never say a thing. I would much rather have somebody say, unsubscribe. Well, thank you very much. It was a personal letter, but I'll unsubscribe you because it was a one-on-one email, but no, thank you for letting me know. I love that. Just tell me no. I'd rather have the no than ghost me forever. So I think it's important for you to have the personality. You got to have that. I think that's an essence of the brand, the essence of the delivery of the promise, the essence of who you are. So why not let that shine? I mean, don't be everybody. Be you and walk into it. Walk into it.
100%. And that's a very consistent theme of yours, Jeff. So I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit more about that. So here's the crux and the nuts and bolts of our conversation, right? You've been very, very successful in using social media to amass a loyal following. I mean, millions. And the C-suite network is simply fabulous, right? What advice would you give to our listeners on building a social media presence?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just be authentic and be you. I mean, I once had somebody who... back in about 10 years ago, followed me and Richard Branson around for a day. She wanted to follow a couple business people. And big writer for one of the big magazines, one like Vanity Fair or something like that. I can't remember. And so she was writing and she wrote, says, I really don't like following you around. I said, and then I wrote back, well, just stop following me. She was following me on social media. So stop following me. I didn't ask you to follow me. You signed up to follow me. You signed up to be my friend. I don't care. I got into Twitter. I was one of the first 1,000 people on Twitter. And only because back then, one of my social media, this is Tom, who went on to become the head, ran Walmart social media, but Tom came to me and said, you got to be on Twitter. I said, what the hell's Twitter? He said, here, let me show you. So I remember sitting in my credenza in my big mahogany office in the corner suite up on, the Eastman Kodak. And I said, oh, show me how to sign up. So we signed up and I got on Twitter. What should I call me? Well, I don't know, Jeff, everybody's picking names. I'm picking my name, Jeffrey Hazlett. That's my name. And so by all the way, I got them all. They're all mine. And there are some other Jeffrey Hazlets who are still swearing to this day because they have the same exact name as me. There's six of us in the United States. So and they're all relatives of some kind from way back. But nonetheless, what were we talking about? And so I got on Twitter. When I got on Twitter, I wrote. I thought, well, what am I going to talk about here? And so I just pretended at the time I signed up, I had all my daughter, my son, my wife, and a few friends. They said, follow me. They follow me. And I would just tell them where I was at. Because my wife, many times, because I was an executive. So one day I'd be in Germany, the next day I'm in France, the next day I'm in India, the next day I'm here, I'm there. It was literally like that. And so I just started tweeting about stuff like that. And so I wrote as though you were my family, and what would you want to know about? Yeah. And I will tell you to this day, that's the stuff that people like more than anything. I post about, now I got to be careful about certain things because there's some real creeps out there. So, I post pictures of me with my granddaughters or something like that, or one time I remember, my next door neighbor's kids all got on Twitter. And I followed them all at the same time. You know how it would tell you he just followed this, that early on they had that, or maybe it was Facebook. And someone at Kodak turned me in and said he's not a pedophile, but he's a creep. The Hazel's a creep because he followed all these women with blonde hair. And it was the three daughters of I'm a godparent of these girls. And it's like they're teenagers and they're on Facebook. And so I follow them. Chelsea, Courtney, and Carly. Chelsea, Courtney, Carly. They all got C names. And so I follow them, and then this, thinks I'm kind of creepy. But anyway, nonetheless, when I write about stuff that's important to me, but you have to be careful. I mean, I learned over the years, to not write things like, hey, today I'm in Denver or something like that, because people, they track you down, they follow you. I mean, I have some of that stuff where I got stalkers and, people in some cities where we actually have to have some security because there's certain kinds of people that you just don't want to be around.
Big shame. But
yeah, so, it is. Yeah.
So I guess that's because you've covered it now. That is your advice on increasing the life of your content, Jeff. That's literally saying the authenticity. I mean, you gave the example.
Yeah, one other thing, if I could. Yes. You, the other thing, I think you want to be consistent.
Yes.
I think it's important for you to be consistent. You don't just do it, like every for a week solid, and then you ghost everybody, and then you get back. And I watch other people who take breaks from it, but they're not doing it from as a brand perspective. They're just doing it as a person, like they, say, I'm going to quit Facebook for 3 months. Like, okay, I get it. They're dealing with other issues, but I think for a brand, and if you're the leader of that brand, you have to sell the company, sell you. You have to be very consistent with it in terms of just a regular, whether it's once a day or every couple of days or whatever you want to do. I just find it to be consistent in both the timing and then also in the kinds of things that you do.
Perfect. No, understood completely. And so you mentioned this point a couple of times earlier, Jeff. How important is being a thought leader to increase your media influence?
Without question, huge. Because, you know, people like to punch above their weight. And so they always want to know that they're associated with people who are smarter than them. Now, they like to be around people like that because that brings you up. And so I think it's important for you for anyone that's doing it to have a voice, whatever it is, pick a side. And by the way, some people get real upset because, all this Trump, Biden, all the stuff that we see, good, right, red, blue, whatever. I mean, I don't care. As long as you're respectful to others, you're entitled to your opinion, you know, and I've written about that in my last book, The Hero Factor. You know, I talked about Trump. I said he's been actually good. And people said, what? Are you crazy? Look at him. He's batshit crazy. I said, yeah, sure he is. But, you know, he's been a friend of mine for years. But yes, he is. And so that's okay. I'm all right with that. But, you know, what did he do? He spoke in such a way that made you pick a side. Mm-hmm. And for years, we've allowed people to go off and do what they do and walk and be in Washington and so forth and so on. And what I thought was advantageous of if you see a positive side of it, and I think you got to look for positive sides wherever possible. He made you pick a side. Now let's take other things. Like, for instance, Truett Cathy runs Chick-fil-A. They make an unbelievable chicken sandwich.
Yep.
But they're closed on Sunday. They're closed on Sunday. Why? Because he believes that they should have a day of rest and his people should to go to church and do those kinds of things. Now, and you might think he's nuts. By the way, he doesn't believe in gay marriages or same-sex marriages. Well, you might object to that. But you know what? He is entitled to that opinion. And I can decide based on his opinion, you know, do I want to let that affect me eating a chicken sandwich? No, because there's people that don't believe in the same thing he does that work for him, and they're making a living from it. And by the way, he makes a good chicken sandwich when I like mine with a little extra pickles on it. And, you know, and by the way, I'm going to buy it. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to support him, you know, in his beliefs and so forth. In fact, no, I'm adamantly opposed to that, at least the one on same sex. But he can do what he wants to on Sunday. It's his business. If he chooses he doesn't want to open it, that's his business. And I can choose so Sunday I'm not getting a chicken sandwich, at least not from him. So, you know, I just think it's important for you to have that voice and to take sides and to have that. And I think it's important for a brand to do that. And you know, you don't have to. And by the way, just because you're a brand or just because you're a thought leader doesn't mean you have a say on everything.
Right.
You know, that's what we forget. You know, yeah. How many thought leaders have I seen who are experts on this before COVID, then became experts on COVID, right? And now they're experts on AI. You know, it's like, what? And so it doesn't mean you can be an expert at everything. And I certainly am. I'm good at what I do and how I do it. And that's what I'm good at. But I don't know what I don't know. And I think that's the things that we should kind of be cognitive of.
Awesome. Awesome. A good segue into what is the hero factor and what are the key leadership wisdom bites from the book?
Oh, well, you know, I learned a lot on the yep. hero factor and that journey of writing this book. And the biggest piece of it was, you know, I was approached by a guy by the name of Rob Ryan a number of years ago. I was had my television show on Bloomberg called The C-Suite with Jeffrey Hazlett. And I take people into the boardrooms, into the C-suite of companies where 99% of the people never get to go, because, you know, in big corporations, the yep. people never get to that top floor. They never get to walk yep. in. They never get to see the boardroom where all the magic happens, right? They never get to see where the bloodbaths are occurring. And so I created a show for that. And I had this guy named Rob Ryan who, back in 1996, it sold his, or 2006, I can't remember. Anyway, he sold 2006. He had sold his company for $20.4 billion. And to Ascent Communications, sold it to Lucent Technologies. And when he sold the company, he set aside a certain percentage of the company for every of the employees. No, he wasn't required to. It wasn't required by law. It was just something he and his wife, who was also the chief legal officer of the company, decided to do because they said, hey, we didn't get here by ourselves. And as a result of it, you know, these people come up to him and say, Mr. Ryan, you don't know me, but you're my hero because you helped me put my kids through college, or you paid for the operation of my mother-in-law who doesn't have health insurance and she had cancer. Now she's going to live. You're our hero. And, you know, he or Terry never felt like heroes, but they wanted to do something different. They wanted to have everybody else have an experience like they had. So they started to, you know, to teach people, you know, through a mastermind, basically. And they created this thing called the Hero Club. Well, I was doing this thing with Bloomberg, and I was covering the Rocky Mountain Economics Summit out in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I'm stepping off the stage, just finished a live hit, and taking my earpiece off. And here comes Rob Ryan. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, he's been trying to reach me for months. And I'm thinking, oh my, he just wants me to write a check to some politician or something. I don't know what the heck he wants. But man, he gets a beeline. He gets about 4 inches from my face and says, give me a dollar. And I'm thinking, what the hell does a billionaire need a dollar for? But I thought, well, maybe he needs a soda or something. So I reached in my pocket. I gave him a dollar. And he said, you just bought the Hero Club. And which I said, well, what the hell is the Hero Club? And so that's when he told me more of the story and more of what he was doing with this group. And he came to me and said, Jeff, you're building this network called the C-Suite Network. It seems to be scaling. He goes, I want you to run this and do this. So that weekend, I went off into the Yellowstone because I was fly fishing. I love to get outdoors, and I'm a avid outdoors person, and hunt and fish and do all that kind of stuff. And so I went out, and, you know, my 4-hour drive into the outback and my 4-hour drive back every day, I would get to thinking more and more. And so I'd call my son, and we got to talk about this Hero Club and, you know, what sets these businesses apart? What sets these Rob Ryans apart from everybody else? And we started to look at it, and we found that the basic underlying factor is that it put people over profits.
Right.
And that the businesses are focused heavily on values, and the values that drive the company drive them personally. And by being personal, they tie it to the company. And so what was the result? So we found out that these companies that are driven by values, value-based companies, gross more money than anybody else in their industry.
Yep.
They net more money than anybody in the industry. They have employees that are more engaged when 53% of the people that work for a company can't even tell you what the vision of the company is. And then they have customers who are more satisfied. And then they have vendors who want to do business with them. And then if you really start to think about it, when you think about these hero companies, because they're doing things for the right reasons, because they can, just because they can. And when they walk through the community or people see them, they go like, there goes a hero leader, because they're superstars. They pay for the little league. They do the things right because they can. I mean, it's amazing. And so as compared to other companies, when you look on the scale, there's value driven companies, and then there's operational driven. So we put it on the scale, high to low, you know, good, bad, heavy intensity. In fact, in the book on page 12, I kind of put this grid together. And we start to identify, well, here's the hero companies and hero with a hero, high, heavy hero factor. They got high values and high operational growth. And then you got asshats, which are no values and low operational growth. And you got do-gooders, you know, who have high values but no operational. And then you got high operational and no values, you know. And I'm not saying they're, you know, some of those are bad, but they're, you know, bottom line, what I call bottom liners. You know, like a Walmart, they're a bottom liner. If Walmart makes a decision on inclusivity and being inclusive and equal opportunity, or they give to a local charity, and so it's a business decision. It ain't a value decision, right? Same thing for GE. And I know the CEOs of both of those companies, and I'm not knocking them, because they do. I mean, like, Walmart's the biggest employer in the United States, so you can't knock them. They're the biggest, right? And they do good things for a lot of people, and they employ a lot of people. But their values are bottom line. They're about the stock. They're about driving what they do, as opposed to, you know, companies that I know and hero leaders that drive the business based on values to do the right things for the right reasons with the right people in the right way at the right time in the right place. I mean, I just keep going, and that's what they do. So it's pretty cool.
What would be a great example of a hero company?
Well, a hero company, there's lots of great examples of them, but like a company that would shut down its shipping because we're shipping the product wrong, right?
Right.
You know, and it's not concerned about obviously they're concerned about the bottom line, but they go doing what's right is more important than booking as much revenue as we can before the clock strikes 12 midnight.
Because
I've been in companies where we've done that. Like, what can we get out the door? You know, and I've been in companies knowing that we were selling products, you know, where they're going to eventually fail. You know, that's a different kind of paradigm that you probably don't want to be in. Right. And, you know, and when you're exposed to this, you start to go, I want to be different. I'd like to operate like that. Why? Because you can. And you got the choice. We all have the choice. You know, we all have the choice to run our businesses the right way. We all have our choices to spend the money doing the things we want to do. But you just got to make the choice. And I think that's important for us to sit back. You know, I've had, you know, like years when I first, you know, left Kodak and was, you know, building up what we call kind of the thought business. And, we were starting to be called a global business celebrity. And said, someone said, what is that? And I said, whatever the hell we tell it is, you know, and we proved that it is. And then I said, we got to build my social influence. Before I had millions, I said, you know, really got to get, you know, followers up to over 100,000, because 100,000 is like, it's got zeros. Because, you know, if you're at 100, 1,000 is better than 100, 10,000 is better than, you know, than that. 100,000 is better than 10,000 now. Millions better than 100,000. You kind of get the point. And once you're up to that level, it's big. But it's like mathematics. Mathematics runs everything. It's all algorithms. So I told the team, you got to get it up to 100,000. They came back to me and they presented the plan. It was like 25,000 on Facebook, 25,000 a year, 25,000. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I told you 100,000. They said, yeah, but the budget. I said, what do you mean the budget? They said, well, we'll overspend the budget. I said, who gave you a budget? I told you to hit 100,000. It's up to me to decide whether or not that's a value or not. You're going to tell me what it's going to cost. I asked you to tell me what it's going to cost. You presupposed some artificial ceiling based on your prior beliefs that I would be overspending the budget. Well, I might say it's worth it. And by the way, it's worth it. If you want to be seen, you know, as a thought leader, there's a lot of things you got to do. There's like 10 things you have to do, you know, be quoted, be cited, be, you know, be have haters. You got to have all these things in order to be a thought leader. And one of those is you got to have people following you. That's the other thing. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, pick your number. It could be two, but, you know, but more than your mom, you know, you got to have more than just your mom. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, look, this is a fabulous conversation. I got to tell you, Jeff, because this is teetering on the side of kind of conscious capitalism. And you know, the objective of this whole podcast series anyway is conscious leadership. So I'm thrilled. So thank you for the hero factor. Thank you for writing a book. Thank you for surfacing that and elevating humanity in your own way. I mean, I think it's fantastic. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, hopefully my mom did a good job. So that's all that counts.
No doubt about that. So which media would you focus on when launching a new business?
Which media?
Yeah.
That's a good point. I will tell you, I am so intrigued with podcasting right now, and not just right now, but it is. Look, I've done television, which has been very good, but the one device that we have more than any is the phone, and or connected devices that are connected to us, and whether you, and I don't want to say her name, because if I say her name from Google, it'll come on my desk. So because I got those devices sitting around here. But you know, you can ask for anything to be played while you're vacuuming, while you're working out. You know, we know, I can look at the statistics and see that, you know, I talked to one podcaster. I said, dude, it's amazing to see your numbers. He goes, what do you mean? Was it 62% of the people that listen to you on iPhone watch? He goes, what? And I said, guess when they listen, it's while they're working out. Right. And so the connectivity of the podcast is pretty unique. I still want to do a book, you know, I've got those coming out. I've got, you know, two or three more coming. And, you know, as you activate content, you know, there's a model for that. But, you know, the phone is the most personal device there is in the history of the world. You know where your phone is more than you know where your children are. I mean, if you lost your children and your phone in the mall at the same time, which one would you go looking for first? I mean, let's be clear, you know. So, you know, so that has given us so much. It also takes away from us too, as well. It's, you know, it's good. Where there's good, there's bad. You know, it's like a teeter totter. You have a balance. You know, you can't have it one way or the other. Yeah. And we have to learn to do that. But if I'm launching more content, it would be in the podcast realm. And then you can do video. We, you know, you and I are recording this. We're doing this via Zoom. Yes. So you can actually turn these two squares into TV.
Yeah.
And just a matter of what you want to invest or how much you want to do. But, you know, I know that when it's a business, and I'm primarily in the world of business, right? Business to business. That connection is very visceral and very real, and you know, and you have to be very careful with it too, because you're in someone's head, right? So the sound has to be good. You have to tell a good story. You have to, you know, I'm hopefully painting pictures for people and engaging them and doing it in a way that they want to continue to listen.
Awesome. Thank you. Great wisdom right there, Jeff. So on the connection point you were making, how will AI impact content creation in the future?
It's scary. I mean, I did a post this week. Paul McCartney, who I know met a couple times, Beatles.
Yep.
He's bringing back a Beatles song. Now, I don't know if he wrote it or John Lennon wrote it. It's not clear to me. But using AI is going to release a song with two people who are dead. Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying that's a good thing or bad thing, but man, should that be done? So first of all, should you do it? Now, if you're a Beatles fan, I'm sure you're going to want to or hear it. But at the same time, I'm going, come on, man, that's not real. And not only can you fake stuff with auto-tunes and all this other stuff, but now you got AI bringing stuff back from the dead. And I'm not sure I want that. So the implications of AI is we haven't thought it through, and we really have to put some rules around this stuff. Okay. Because I mean, you got kids going on now writing papers from AI. Now there's good news or bad news. Some of these kids are so stupid. They forgot to, you know, take the footnotes off that this was created by AI when they turned the paper in.
Yeah,
I just heard about that. Right. But can you use it? There are some things that I love AI for. I love AI to jumpstart projects, to jumpstart a letter, but I wouldn't take it for just everything, right? You know, so I'm a little worried about that. And so, yeah, I'm just saying it's got a lot of problems. It's got a lot of good things, but got a lot of problems, and we got to figure that out. And it's going to take some really smart people to figure it out. You know?
Keep me on the same page, Jeff, because I do think, and you know, I've recently gone on ChatGPT because my boys tell me to do that and go explore. And yes, it can replicate your voice, your sound. It can ask questions and all this kind of good stuff in your tone. But there's a point where I believe there is an emotive part to this, right? There's an emotion and your true self. Can it come out in media, and can AI really replace that? Yet to be seen, but I'm on the same
page. Well, campaign. I mean... Yeah, it's no different. You know, I want to give somebody some credit. Adobe recently put out something on the AI tools that they've got, but they're putting a watermark inside of it to digitally watermark the images to let you know that they were created by AI or using some forms of AI. Now, I thought that, okay, good job, Adobe. Now, Adobe's usually a fairly predatory brand because I've competed against them. I've been partners with them before, but I've also competed greatly with them. But I thought, you know, let's give them some credit for that. You know, it's no different. Have you ever watched some of these like videos? I mean, I watch and read. I consume a lot of content, all kinds of different things, everything from trapping beavers and foxes and coyotes to even makeup videos. And I'm watching this one woman who's not the most attractive woman. Now, please don't, no cards and letters. All right. But she was not the most attractive woman, who they put makeup on, probably about 14 different kinds of layers. I mean, it was just like, they did a time lapse. It probably took them all day, right? And at the end of it, she was like drop dead kind of gorgeous. And I'm going, fake news, right? This is fake news. Well, to me, that's kind of like AI. AI can do that. right? It can make the lame walk, and it can make the blacks white, whites black. It can make, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, holy crap. And I'm real concerned about that. You know, it'll make the dumb smarter, you know, it'll make, you know, all that. Some of it's got good implications. I mean, some of it's going to be good. We know that, right? You know, it might help us, you know, cure cancer, might help us do this, it might help us do that, but it also might cause a shitload of other problems. And I think it will. And I'm a little concerned about it, you know, no different than making, you know, having your, you know, my grandkids, you know, pick up the phone too much. Put that down. Let's have dinner and let's, you know, same thing, same kind of
100%,
thing.
100% with you. Thank you for that. Awesome. Well said. Okay. Next couple of rounds, we'll move quickly. What would you change, Jeff, in any area of life, not just business? What would you change?
What would I change? I'd change more. Time for just reflecting, you know, and enjoying and gratitude would be the other piece of it. You know, I spend a lot of time with my groups about what are you grateful for? And I know that's a big part of what you've got as well. Yeah. But I would spend more time with that, like being purposeful in my actions. You know, we're so about do, get go, get it done. Achieve, rather than, whoa, slow down, enjoy. You know, it's like the other night I had a beautiful meal of simple roasted vegetables. I made salmon patties that my mom used to make, and I had roasted sweet potatoes and roasted cauliflower with a nice little lemon drizzle. Just simple. Nothing, not outrageous, just simple. And some arugula, you know, and a nice wine. Just, that's what I'm talking about. That, to me, those are the kind of moments where you just like relax, take it easy, and as opposed to rushing through your dinner and going on to do the next thing or whatever it is. Yeah,
absolutely. Being more mindful, no doubt about that. What are you grateful for in any area of life, not just business?
Mostly grateful. You know, everybody says, hey, what do you want to do when you grow up? And, you know, or they ask you, what's your biggest mistake? They'll ask you a lot of that. What's your biggest mistake? I always say, I don't know. I haven't done it yet. And, you know, meaning I've got bigger ones coming. You know, it's like, I'm grateful for the most part. Everybody says, what do you want to do? I said, I just want to be known as a great grandfather, you know, a great husband. I've done my best as much as I can. Probably not the best I could have done. Great father, could have done better there too. Well, let's don't screw up with the grandfather thing. So what I'm most grateful for is my family, because they're the ones that keep you humble. I mean, they do, you know. They know you when you're up, they know you when you're down, they know you, you know. And I, you know, I've been married for 40 some years now, and I wouldn't be married to me. I know me, I wouldn't marry me. So that's what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for those things.
Thank you for your vulnerability and your humility, because we're going to go to the quick round now.
Most people wouldn't say that. Most, thank you very
that
much
is
for saying
awesome.
That.
I love it. No,
most people wouldn't say I, because you got it. Well, I just go big. If you're gonna go big, it's like when I speak to audiences across the globe. I'll go to France or somewhere, and I'll say, hey, you guys, you know, big. You think about big, bold Americans. Well, I'm gonna be that times 10. So let's just put that on the table. You know, so we might as well.
Well, I read one of your articles recently when you're talking about radical humility is the key to business success.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about that. And I want to focus on part B of that question is, how has a failure or apparent failure set you up for success?
And you're going to fail. Hey, dude, you're going to fail. Everybody talks about it. That's a big thing right now in the Bay Area or wherever the tech companies is like, oh, I'm a failure. I've done this failure, this failure. Well, okay, got it. We all have. And everybody talks about fail fast. Well, it's not about failing fast, it's about winning fast. You're going to fail. Let's just 100%. Be clear. Okay, yeah, failing sucks. It sucks, right? Losing sucks. All right? Winning is cool. Right? Because you celebrate and all that stuff. Failure sucks. And they always like to have you talk about your failures. I'm like, dude, I forget about those. Yes. I really do. You might learn, you know, I burn my hand on the stove. I don't want to remember it. Okay. Got it. I just know the stove's hot. That's what I learned. Stove's hot. Okay. So that's kind of how I move through life about that thing. To be humble, and most people listen might not think that that's the case, but it is. you know, I talk to everybody, I meet with everybody, I love everybody, I love to learn. You can learn from anyone and everything. And, you know, and I don't know, I go through life with a constant state of unawareness or awareness. That's what I call it. I don't know what I'm aware of. I'm aware of the things I'm not aware of. And so I'm always constantly trying to learn and figure it out and know that I am not the reason for all this stuff. It's just, I happen to be in the right place, right time, like a Forrest Gump life. And I've got all these people around me and together we do these things. And that's what I try to do and how to figure that stuff out. But the second you start believing your own press releases is when, man, that's when it goes wrong. I call it the Johnny Vegas syndrome. And you start believing it's you. It ain't about you, right? And it never is, but you're a piece of that. And I mean, you might be a catalyst for it. You might have been the person who became the champion when you had all these captains of no, you know, whatever it might be. But, you know, there were not, you know, you can't control those things. I mean, even in business today, if you're the CEO, doesn't mean you're going to be able to get this thing done. You can't. In a multi-billion-dollar company, I used to think, well, CEOs wield this huge amount of power. No, there's so many people that are working against them, for whatever reasons, you know, that you know you just have to learn that you it takes the village to get it all done, and that's the name of the game. Yeah,
100%, Jeffrey. Well said. Great wisdom bite. Thank you. So, from your books, your several books, pick a couple of wisdom bites you want to share with the audience. You know, between Think Big, Act Bigger, The Rewards of Being Relentless, Running the Gauntlet, The Mirror Test. Just one or
back.
Two.
Let's go to the mirror test. Let's go back to fogging the mirror. I mean, when you're a Boy Scout or Girl Scout, you want to see if something was alive. You had a mirror to its face, right, to the nose. And if they fog the mirror, you're alive. So that's the ultimate test, right, of any business. Will the dog eat the dog food? Can you sell it? Can you do it? We all come up with stories all the time about – I can talk myself into thinking this business model will work, but until you sell it, until you get somebody to believe in it, until you can scale it, until you get to a certain level, whatever those conditions of satisfaction are, you don't know. But here's what I've learned. And the one piece of nugget that I'll give to you from that book, very first one, every day you look into the mirror and the person that's looking back to you is responsible for your success. Nobody else, not your nurse, not your doctor, not your mom, not your lawyer, not your accountant. It's you. You know, it's like I had someone who called me recently is upset because they went through bankruptcy, they had a really tough couple of years because the industry changed. Yet they were trying to partner with me and they're trying to blame me for that. Like, dude, it's the world, it's life. And then the person responsible for success. Well, you said, I got that. We said that. I believed it too. Look, I lost my ass on this thing too, right? But I'm responsible for my success. I'm responsible for my unsuccess. I'm responsible for my actions, and we have to have accountability for that. And that's the most important thing, is to look in the mirror and know that that's the person that's responsible.
Beautifully. Beautifully said. Jeff, I tell you and I can speak for hours and hours. I know you've got a honey-do list. So I'm going to give you two.
I do. My wife has got a long list of things today on the ranch that I got to get done.
I want to give you two or three more questions. What is your favorite brand and why? Outside of Jeff Hazlett, what is your favorite brand? Yes.
Well, it depends on what category. But like, if you ask me right off the bat, I'm probably going to say Ruger.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I'm picking my guns. I love guns and I love the Ruger brands. I love the old Rugers. All right, that's one.
Awesome.
I love what they do. One of the few all steel guns, all made today. It's great. Yeah, that's one. That'd be one. But you know, I love Toomey's. I love Ford's. I love Apple. Apple. When somebody says, "Why do you have Apple all the time?" I said, "Because you push this button and it just turns on and it runs. It's like awesome. And and you buy something new and it also pops up. Would you like to connect to it?" It's like, dang, I love stuff like that. Yeah, there's some good ones out there.
Beautifully. Okay, and what is your favorite personality? I'm talking about an individual outside of Jeff Hazlett. Your favorite personality brand, who would that be?
Oh, my gosh, there's so many of them. Everyone from like a Gene Simmons, who got fired on Celebrity Apprentice and we're good friends and along those lines. Pierce Morgan, who I've argued about gun control with on his show and my show. And, you know, but personality. You know what I'm going to say? I know this is going to be whack crazy. Dolly Parton.
Wow.
Because you know what? She is as genuine as if we find out that she's fake someday, and there could be some aspects of her. Let's just be clear about that, right? But you know what? I just adore that woman. I think she's a really cool gal. I think she does a really good job. And she every time you see her, she just surprises you. I mean, like when they tried to put her in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, she said, no,
that's
I'm
brilliant.
not. I'm not. I mean, she's just a cool gal, you know, and she's got her own Dollywood. She's got her own park named after her. That's pretty good. You know, I don't have a park named after me. I don't have anything. We got to get something like that. You know, that'd be cool. Anyway, she's pretty cool. There's a lot of people like that. It depends, you know, on different things. Different genres about when you think about personality brands or, you know, people. And then if I think about thought leaders, lots of great thought leaders out there that are just doing a really good job and do it for the right reasons, you know. And some people I'm totally opposed to. I mean, I just had Art Laffer. You know, Art and I don't see the same thing. He used to be the advisor for Ronald Reagan. He was just on my show. But I absolutely adore talking to him. And every time he and I've run into each other and it's been backstage or whatever, we just have the greatest conversations. And some of them are whacked. And the other day he said something to me that I thought was just brilliant. He said, never catch a thrown knife. And and he was referring to the upcoming recession. And so, you know, the people like that, that you just, you know, you might not always like, you know, or I see eye to eye. I put it that way. See eye to eye. I love, by the way, I love that. I love healthy debate. I love people who say the opposite things to me so we can have a great conversation. I just love that.
You're you know? you're a curious cat. I can tell you that. It's brilliant. Brilliant. I love it. Okay.
Thank you.
What question should I have asked that I didn't?
Well, you should have asked me what favorite brand of scotch I like, and then what bottle should I send you? That's what. And by the way, it would be all of them, probably. But yeah, I'm known to enjoy libation from time to two, and I love to do that. But that's it. That would be the only one.
All right, last question. What is your parting advice for us to build a great business content and harness the power of technology to distribute it?
Yeah, do it faster.
Wow.
You know, do it faster. Yeah, the thing that most of us do, we wait for everything to be perfect. Don't wait for perfect. Done is better than perfect, but once done, move to perfect.
I agree. I tell you, Jeff, that is brilliant advice because I'm in your camp on that one. We can strive for perfection. You're better off getting 80% and iterate towards, but you better get it. You know, you're finding stuff out and you're perfecting along the way, but don't start with perfection. 100%. Great advice. Jeff, this is fantastic, man. You are an absolute pleasure. What you see is what you get, man.
That's the name of the game. I tell people that.
I've had
people in my operation, they said, well, I didn't see that coming. I said, well, I don't know. If I tell you if I'm going to punch in the face, I'm going to punch in the face. This is coming. It's coming. So I try to always be that person as much as possible. I try not to be too complicated. It's complicated. It's too hard. I know. I'd rather be much easier. So much easier. What you see is what you get. Yeah. There you go.
What you see, what you get. You're a curious person. You're a learner. And above all of that, I tell you, I love your vulnerability and your humility. Beautiful thing. You got a big personality. You're a beautiful person, man. I love you.
Well, thank you. Well, let's do it again. Let's do it again.
We will. I'm going to ask you tougher questions next time. I'm going to follow up on your honey-do list to make sure you checked it off.
It's upstairs. It's been written out. I'm going to be going to do it. So
all the very best. And thank you for everything you're doing for humanity. You're doing a great job, man. You're changing a lot of lives along the way.
All right, Richard. Thank you.
Take care. All the best. Thank you very
Cheers.
Much.
All Bye-bye. Right.
I hope that you found today's session valuable. If so, please follow me on Instagram @outram.richard and post your comments. Thank you again. Until the next podcast.